Welcome to Overtures. While my guest from this episode is currently on a holiday break from tour, you can catch him back on the Winnie the Pooh tour starting in January, and they'll be going strong through May. So go see him at a tour location near you. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Hi, I hope you're doing well on this Tuesday here in October. I hope everyone's doing fantastic and having a fantastic day. So we're going to go ahead and get started pretty quickly today. First, again, I hope everyone's doing well. Second, I got to see a show this past weekend. I got to see You Will Get Sick by Noah Diaz running at the Laura Pels Theater, Roundabout Theater Company. I highly, highly recommend this play. There are some incredible actors and designers who have worked on this show and created an incredible ensemble piece directed by Sam Pinkleton. So I highly recommend that you check it out. I had no idea what I was getting into going into it, but it's fantastic. Comedic, heartbreaking, groundbreaking. So with that, I hope you get a chance to go see it. It's running through December 11th, I believe. So yeah, go take a look at that. I am personally actively working to cross-post information a bit more from my Instagram on my Twitter too. So if Twitter is a preferred social app of yours, you can now find out who's on upcoming episodes and submit questions on Twitter. So that's going to be on my personal one at Laura_Marjoram on Twitter. And additionally, I got a notification the other day that we now have a community tab here on the Overtures YouTube channel. So subscribe if you haven't yet. I will also post updates there about upcoming guests and accept questions there. I want to make this community tab a place where people can discuss former episodes, connect, and more. So keep an eye out for some unique posts, threads, and such. So with that, we will go ahead and get started. This is episode 51 of Overtures. Incredible. And with that, I am going to start with a video.
Our world is digital. This device we're in and rely on relies on digits, right? Zeros and ones. Yes, they're invisible, but you zoom in enough and underneath are digits. Zeros and ones. And these digits so foundational and permanent. In the grass, the trees, the birds, the bees, the firmament are all objectively, subjectively determinant in how they're terminant. Now ask me why. Why? Well, these hidden matrices of digits the phone displays as you and me could just as well be re-encoded as any glyphs we wanna be. If we could look past what's explicit, we'd see that what's implicit has no limit, no limit, no limit. That anything is possible, anything is possible, anything is possible. Zeros and ones.
Amazing. My guest today is an actor, singer, and storyteller from the Adirondack region of upstate New York. A lifelong performer, he got his start in community theater at an early age before following his passions to Wagner College, where he earned his Bachelor of Arts in Theater and Speech, Performance Concentration. While there, he also minored in Spanish and received the Dolly Laurie Smith Award for Achievement in his senior year. In summer of 2018, he studied musical theater under the direction of Alan Dornack at Orfeo Vocal Arts Academy in Dresden, Germany. And in summer 2022, he played Patchy the Pirate in Arizona Broadway Theater's The SpongeBob Musical. Currently, he can be seen adventuring across the United States as Christopher Robin on the first national tour of Disney's Winnie the Pooh, the new musical stage adaptation produced by Rockefeller Productions. My guest and I have been friends since day one. Of his first year of college, that is. You already heard what a killer voice he has, but not only that, he has such a gift for comedy, is so game in the rehearsal room, and is truly such a hard worker. He's also a favorite of mine to laugh and make bits with. So without further ado, this is Ross Coughlin.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. How hello. Are you?
I'm good. You're so sweet.
Well, it's true. It's true. Like, I remember meeting during freshman orientation. I'm like, I like this kid. I like this kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember meeting you too. yeah, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. I know you've been doing a ton of traveling recently. Where are you right now?
A little bit. I'm actually in New York City. It just happened. We're on a regularly scheduled break from touring. We always have this week off, and I was home yesterday. I'll be home later this week, but I'm in New York City now.
Beautiful. Yeah, because I know we have some plans tomorrow. So I was like, wait, where is he today?
Yeah.
But cool. Good to know that you're also here in New York City. It's a very cloudy, not fun day.
Yes,
but that's okay because we're here.
It's okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I always love to give context how I know my guest, and with most that guests that I have on here, it is always Wagner College, and especially so in this case. And like I was saying, we became friends during your orientation. It was like you and Alexandra DeAngelis, also a former guest, were like the first theater majors of your class that I got to meet, and we all definitely hit it off immediately.
yeah, totally. We did. I loved like the orientation process at Wagner, and like I did community leadering other years.
Yeah, and, yeah. We ended up both doing orientation from years following that.
Yeah, it's just like it was a wonderful place to like meet people, and you're like one of like my good friends from there. But it's just a great school with a lot of great people.
Yeah, 100%. And we had a lot of classes together throughout our time.
I believe
the one that sticks out for sure will always be like Jazz 2, this 8 a.m. dance class where there were a handful of sophomores like me, but then it was just all freshmen, including you. And we were all scared out of our wits.
Yeah, dancing continues to scare me a little bit, I have to admit. But
I feel like it was always like we would share looks in the mirror like, Are we actually going to do that? I'm terrified.
What's happening?
Exactly.
We got through it, and we did pretty good. So
we did.
Yeah.
We did pretty good. I'm proud of us. And of course, like most theater kids, always hung out in like the dining hall. And then you ended up living across the hall from me. So like, it just continued and continued. But most memorably, we worked on First Date together with Completely Student Productions, one of the student-run companies on campus. That was such a fun show. It was such
fun.
An all-star cast and crew, and you and I had way too much fun even if we weren't on stage.
Yeah, we had that that scene where we were at the table together and we were like ad-libbing.
I think it was
that,
like, complete
also...
I was gonna no, say go. I think it's it was all like leading up to Girl for You, and so we knew that there was a whole scene before the song,
right?
And so we created like a whole backstory of like this couple like not having a good time. Like, I think our like ensemble characters were like breaking up like over on the side of the stage, and then we were like, okay, now I'm Grandma Ida, like.
right, that was fun. That show has so cool like different styles, like that's one of the things I remember about that show, is like especially the Spring Awakening like esque number, like the fake little microphone.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So fun.
Awkward pause always was a good one. I had such a hard time holding it in every single time we did it because the melodrama was just so perfect. But then like you and Gino got to play like the bad ex-boyfriends, and like
so bad.
That was so rocker. Yeah, so bad. So bad.
So the boys were so bad.
Exactly.
The moment.
Let me clarify. You all sounded fantastic on it. The ex-boyfriends were incredibly bad. But yeah, that was such an insane show, but it's one of my favorites, I know, from Wagner, and I'm glad I got to share that with you.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
But yeah, getting into the actual like interview part of all this, how did you first get started in theater?
So, I have just like always been doing it. I know I first started like doing community theater when I was 9. And I did it with Adirondack Regional Theater, which is like a wonderful community theater in my hometown. But I apparently like always wanted to. Like, I know that my kindergarten teacher at elementary school was like the drama teacher, but we couldn't do the shows till third grade.
Right.
But we still did like a Polar Express for our parents, like one night for just the kindergarten class. So like, I've just always been doing that. But the start was community theater, and where I'm from, Clinton County, Plattsburgh, New York, there just like is a lot of really great community theater opportunities. So I did like junior productions, as like I did 7 consecutive summers of like being in junior shows with community theater. I then did the middle school and the high school shows. There's a community college there where anyone could do shows. Did those?
Oh, I love that.
You know, like really great opportunities and like interesting networks of friends of all different ages, all doing as much theater as they can.
I love that so much because I feel like it. Not every community is like that in that they have so many different ways to dip your feet into theater. Because so often I know where I grew up, it was like, you maybe got a chance to work on the middle school show as an elementary schooler. There was the middle school show and then the high school shows. And there was a local community theater, but so often it conflicted with like so many other after school things that everyone did as kids that other than that, there really wasn't much to get your hands on. And so I love it when I get to hear other communities, like you and Amy Nesifaro both talked about this on here, of like how much that community theater in your respective hometowns like really like became a community and taking care of each other and also like constantly working on different things together. And that just warms my heart so much to hear. And I'm curious, what was that first junior production that you did?
Okay, so the first junior production was Seussical. Is that exciting or is that exciting?
I love it.
Because Michelle Falk.
Yes.
I was the Grinch. So I think in the junior version, the Grinch like exists as the Grinch and then has like one line as the Grinch. Everything else is like not there.
I think it's it's so funny to me that shows like Seussical have a junior version, because like I understand that it's like from a musical's perspective and like scaling it down so that the kids don't feel so overwhelmed. But the idea of it being Seussical Junior just is so funny to me in my mind, because it's like, well, yeah, it is made for kids. You're right. It's like, well, no, not quite.
Yeah, the junior, I can talk about this like more later, but like I just love like what iTheatrics does, like making these shows, because it's like, it just makes it accessible. Like, it's so important. I did that. That's what I did. That's how I knew what theater was and how I felt like I could contribute at that time. And like, then you've got something like Beauty and the Beast, where like, it's an hour and a half movie they made into a 2.5 hour musical. And then they made that 2.5 hour musical version into an hour, which is shorter than the original, but they still had stuff from crazy. So exciting.
It's bonkers. And I definitely have like a whole section later on in my notes where we get to talk about junior shows and more. So we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, being that you're on overtures, what was that overture or light bulb moment for you of like, oh, but this is, I want to do this like as my career in life?
Sure. So I just had always been doing it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. And I love to do it. And I always, I had a lot of fun. Always a lot of fun, but I did take it seriously in like, I think thankfully like a healthy way. I cared and I put like some effort into it, and people were like, you're good at this. Like, they clapped, you know, when the show was over, people clapped and I liked it. And it was a dream, but my parents were very like supportive the whole time, which I guess the real answer is just my parents didn't like instill a lot of fear in me about that. Yeah, like they supported me. So so with like realism in mind, I just like was, if I can do this, then I can do that. So I did like a summer program. I did the Carnegie Mellon summer program in 2015. Right.
Yes, I remember talking about that.
That's how I knew Justin Forrest. And Emily Barkovic, another good friend of mine, did it the year before me. Another Wagner person for the people at home.
Yes, exactly.
So I did that and like things went well there, you know, like people were still supportive and still like, something like you should maybe still do this. And then I was like, well, if I get into a college, like maybe then so it's just kind of like little steps.
Yeah, I was going to say, I keep interrupting you.
I'm really going to say anything. I'm just saying it was good. You know?
No, you're good. 100%. It's those little steps that you kind of look back and you're like, oh, I guess I kind of did follow this entire career path, didn't I?
To be honest, like I had to check in again with the pandemic, as a lot of people did. Because full disclosure, like 2020 graduation year, our showcase was canceled and then postponed and then done virtually. And a lot of my friends and other career paths or even other areas of theater like arts admin had remote work, like their careers still moved forward with a lot of confusion and a lot of like still difficulty, but they, things happen. And for theater, like it's just about being in the room with people. So
yeah,
I was like, is this even a thing? How do I feel? So I'm very happy, you know, to be where I am now and very grateful to be performing and talking to you and doing all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of us in theater and beyond had that moment of reconciliation of like, okay, we're all really forced to take a pause right now. Is this what we want to continue doing? But I'm very grateful that I think for many of us, we found the paths that we were meant to be on in that way. And I'm so glad that like people like you and I get to continue doing this wonderful thing called theater, and all these other people found amazing other avenues and that kind of thing. Also, going back to your bio for a quick moment, I feel like I knew you studied Spanish at Wagner, but I don't think I ever knew that you minored in it and then got an award.
Well, the award is related to like performance at Wagner.
Yeah.
So those are like little separate ideas.
Okay.
But I minored in Spanish. I would love to be very confident in my abilities. I do know what's going on, but I'm a little rusty. I think the next goal for me would be to actually go to like a Spanish speaking. I've done immersive classes. I did a lot of those, but I never actually got to go. And there's plenty of programs. I have a friend also on tour with me now who we've talked briefly about he did a tour like in Spanish speaking countries. And that's like, I still need to unpack and learn more about that, but that's cool. I started in sixth or seventh grade and it was another thing that I like to do, like language communication.
Yeah.
Stretching the brain, stuff like that. And I did it, and wonderful, wonderful program at Wagner. For the minor.
Yeah.
And I did that. So that's true. I will not
you're
be
like,
speaking
it is
Spanish
true.
At the
no,
moment.
No, I'm not gonna test you. Look, I took German. I'm not gonna test you on your language speaking skills today. That's so cool though, because I feel like a lot of people start learning a foreign language in school, and then once they meet their requirement for like their high school diploma or like for their degree, they stop. So I'm curious what influenced you to keep pursuing it or like starting it in college, like continuing it in college rather.
Right. Well, in general, I liked, like I said, I was good at it a little bit. Like the vocab was there, the accent was there. Like I enjoyed studying it, like first off, like in high school. So then coming to college, I knew I probably wanted a minor. I mean, Wagner's also a BA, so I knew that the opportunity to get a minor was like stronger here than some other places as well. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I want to do this. And I like looked around and I was like, if I do this, it's this kind of commitment, it's this kind of classes. So I tried it out. I got placed at a level that was appropriate for me. And I just moved through throughout college.
I love that.
So I just wanted to study it more.
100%. And I'm curious, and if the answer is no, that's 100% okay as well. Have your Spanish studies come in handy at all as like an actor or as a theater artist?
I don't think specifically, like I can't give like a good example.
No, that's okay.
I know that like, once again, like as a tool for like connection and like communication, even if I forget something, the fact that I know a little bit is like, is there. And I do, I've watched like, there's like Elite on Netflix, which I didn't watch like the last few seasons, but I watched that like in Spanish, you know, with subtitles, but I'm always able to like go and test how much I remember and like engage with a big portion of the population that speaks Spanish or wants to, or is practicing. So I don't think that's going to go away.
Yeah, I love that.
And it could factor into theater in the future.
100%.
It definitely could.
Oh, it absolutely could. Especially when you're talking about things like tours that go to countries that mostly speak Spanish. It's at least helpful for like when you're not on the show and you need to like go into town and like get things. Like having that kind of foundation is incredibly helpful. And I know that you have a big love for collaboration. It's easy to see in any rehearsal room, even going back to like First Date like we were saying, we were like in character on stage doing all these other crazy bits while someone's mm-hmm. having a full scene in the background. You have a collaboration, a love for collaboration that really helps you in working on new works. And you've found a definite love for that. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I feel like this is like half related, but it's kind of like that saying, you know, like when they get, when you like are coloring a coloring book and like, I always like add something, you know, like I find a pen and like add like a detail that isn't part of it.
Yeah.
Or like projects in elementary school, like playing within the rules, but also like what else is an option here? So I think like that is like at the heart of like collaboration for me, but it's with other people and like expanding and seeing what other people can bring to it. We had a new works program at Wagner and that started while we were there.
Yeah. I think it started perhaps your freshman year, my sophomore year.
It might've been my sophomore year. It might've been a year off.
Yeah. Maybe my junior year. I don't remember, but somewhere in like those two years. Yeah.
And I know that, Teresa McCarthy, a wonderful teacher from Wagner and a wonderful person. Hi Teresa, if you're watching, she kind of like led that program, but I also got to work with her within that program on a piece. So I did something with Michelle Pock. We did Small Town Story. Mm-hmm. And that was cool because the writers, you know, came and visited and things did change. And we did practice things and we ended up with like a really nice music stand reading with like lighting and
very well
a lot of character work. Very fun. And then I did mouthpieces with Teresa. And that was cool. Like three separate stories all pertaining to like mouth and teeth and
so kooky, but so fun and so like heart, like touching, like very like, yeah.
And that was a really small cast. It was like, I think, well, not really small. It was like seven of us.
Yeah. It was definitely less than 10. Yeah.
And that we did for a while because we did the reading, which had a normal amount of rehearsal and then a reading. And then we went away for the summer and came back in the fall and had a normal amount of rehearsal and did a real production.
Yeah.
And then we actually worked on that again. Vanessa did one of the mouthpieces virtually for Columbia.
Yeah.
Last year, actually, that was probably 2 years ago. And some of us participated in that. So that's the cool thing, you know, like working on new stuff and figuring out how you want to present it, because there aren't reference recordings necessarily.
Exactly.
And there aren't set ways on doing it. So I did those two, and that really solidified that I wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to work briefly, only because it was remote, but on Sticks and Stones, written by Scott Logsdon and John McDaniel. And we did that for BCFA virtually, and like really cool people were in it, like Audra McDonald was in it, and like Michael Kilgore. I didn't meet any of them. I would love to, but I did not. But I sang some ensemble stuff and sent in the vocals and sent in the video, and then that might still exist on the internet. I'm not sure. But
you're like somewhere maybe.
For sure, like another like new work avenue. And I also am now gonna do a reading in New York in November.
Yes. That was just announced. Do you want to mention that really quick?
Sure. It's really just announced. It's called Dear Mom, I'm Gay. It was, I believe they've had, I'm new to it because it was just announced. So I have a limited perspective, but I'll be with them working on it in November for sure. And then we present it November 19th. But it was in Chicago as I think two separate readings. And this is the first time it's made the jump to New York. So we're all very excited. And it's about like a gay man who goes to college, and the way his mother practices her faith leads him to believe that she won't be accepting. And that's like a familiar story.
Yeah.
Some of us, we've seen it. And if we haven't seen it, like some of us have lived it and stuff like that. So I'm understudying the guy who is gay and is coming out.
Yes.
And I'm excited to meet all those people in person and play with them and collaborate and see what comes of it.
That's so exciting. Congratulations about that. I remember seeing the post the other day and I was like, ah, wait, hold on. What's happening? Just announced. That's so amazing. And it's so fun to hear you talk about collaboration being like, here's the thing that we started with. Let's just keep adding things. Let's see what works. Cause so much it's funny cause I know you're not necessarily a director, but that is kind of a little bit of a director brain of like, what can we play with? What can we stretch out? But then also you had mentioned to me that you've also developed a love for story structure and writing. So that makes sense then that you're like, let's add some stuff. Let's see what's happening here. Do you want to tell me how you got started with that a little bit? Cause that's new for me.
Yeah, that would be new. I like when I wrote essays and like, I keep talking about elementary school, but it's important.
It's formative.
When I wrote like essays, like I had English teachers who were like, you could like write things. And I was like, cool. And stored that away and like went on with my life. And then in college, I was able to take the playwriting course senior year. And, you know, once it, like, kind of like how I went to, if I can get into college, maybe I can do this for real and other stuff like that, like testing it out. Like, what is this like for me? Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. It was fun. It was cool. I got good like feedback. I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed reading other people's stuff. And then those productions never happen because like, right, the playwriting stuff goes to directing at Wagner and then it gets produced usually. And that was 2020. So it was written, things were selected. I don't think directing had started on them yet. And then they didn't happen. So that going into the pandemic with this like incomplete, we didn't see it. I was like, I'm still missing something out of that. So I found some like script writing books and some things that I liked and some things that I really liked. I've been writing specifically like short screenplays since the pandemic, using the Nutshell Technique is a book. I use some of the things from that, but I read this book called Into the Woods. It's not about the musical. It's called Into the Woods, a 5-act journey into story structure, I believe. It's written by John York, who like wrote for BBC soap operas and stuff. And it's just smart. It's just cool. He's just like really breaking down, like examining like why we tell stories, how we do, and then how that relates to structure.
That sounds really interesting and really cool. I'm curious then, because you're saying you're writing some screenplays. Yeah. I think that's interesting that you're leaning more towards screenplays than like stage works, for example. And was that because of like the pandemic, or was that like I lean more towards this medium for writing?
I think I want to write plays.
Okay.
I think I do. What happened was I found some like online competitions that were screenplays. A lot of the books talk about screenplays. They're very I haven't come across many books. There's certainly playwriting books, but I haven't come across as many that are talking about like the structure the way I was looking at it. A lot of the books were talking about like dialogue as an idea and like other things. And I just wanted to like zoom in, look at that. So I started writing screenplays because the competitions were screenplays, because I think that like if I wrote a play, I would want to like do it right away, but a screenplay feels far away. So just like playing around, also the immediacy of like, I was watching a lot of TV and film.
Yeah.
We were, totally. There was a pandemic, we were home, practice what I see, getting inspired by stuff. So yeah, so I've written some, it will translate to other things. It has helped me like understand acting more. It's one of those things, just the learning about all aspects of theater and like creative arts.
100%. It's learning all those different crafts that helps you be better as a theater artist as a whole. So that 100% makes sense. Looking at it in that way and being like, oh, okay, now that I'm writing, I now understand what the playwright's job is and going from there.
Right.
I should have mentioned this earlier because we were just talking about Spanish, but technically not only did you study Spanish, but also a little bit of German. You studied under Alan Dornack at Orfeo Vocal Arts Academy in Dresden. How many weeks was that again? I remember it's a longer program, but I couldn't remember.
It was 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Okay.
3 weeks. Gotcha. Yes. So we went summer of 2018, There's it's still a program. If you want to go, please go. It's picked up since the pandemic, but it did stop for a second. But 2018, I had never been abroad. I'd been to Canada because I live kind of close to it.
Yeah.
But I had never, you know, gone to another country or any of Europe.
Yeah.
So I went and it was great. We did study German. We had German classes in the morning. We were also immersive. So I was never trying to like learn how to speak
yeah.
it, but I did learn enough, you know, mm-hmm. and I would need to brush up if I were to go back, but I would be a little bit closer than
yeah.
not knowing anything.
True.
And that was the summer because it was German classes, immersive, so like German culture, like we'd go on day trips, excursions.
Yeah.
And then like musical theater classes in the afternoon. So we would have master classes, we would have private lessons for singing, for rep, for acting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool because Alan had lived in Germany for some time in college and does
gotcha.
This every summer. So he really knows what's up.
Yeah.
And he's also a wonderful voice teacher. So that was the summer that like we opened up like My Legit and practice. Like consistent vibrato and practice. We did Pirates, I think, the year after at school.
Right.
At Penzance. So what
Perfect
is this
timing.
Like? How do we feel about these sounds that we're making? Mm-hmm. And it's been very freeing to have been in Germany because also little concerts, like I don't know any of these people. They're not going to see me again. Like
exactly.
Whatever comes out.
And you're singing in castles, no less.
Yes. In castles, we were staying in a hotel, a lot of cool places, and it was just beautiful. It was just like I really enjoyed being there and studying all of that, and it was a great summer and education, and the fact that all of that exists in one program is just like really good. Really
oh,
good.
Absolutely. And I do have a short clip of you singing in a castle,
oh,
so
yeah.
we're just gonna watch a quick little snippet of that.
Sure.
Song, by the way.
It is. It's really beautiful. That was, it was the little caption was Ross
yes.
and a Schloss because
I loved that.
Schloss is castle in German.
Oh my gosh. And I feel like you were just saying this, but I feel like everyone who has done the program have been able to speak to how formative and how much growth they had while they were there. And like you were saying, you can confirm that similar experience, which is really exciting.
Yeah, it was the closest I've gotten to like a conservatory, right? Because we did very, and I love Wagner, very happy to have gotten my BA there. But it was like 3 weeks where we were just singing. We were just thinking about, and we weren't also trying to do shows, which I don't
right.
know if I've had an experience. I'm always trying to do a show. I think there was 3 weeks where like we were working on ourselves as performers mm-hmm. outside of trying to be in any greater thing and like think about type or think about like we were just singing and thinking about how to make the sounds and like how if we like the sounds and how to play with what's going on for me. And it was really nice.
Yeah, getting 3 whole weeks to work on yourself with no other end goal than just singing.
Yeah,
that's that I can
I
imagine
thought
that,
of it that way before,
very
yeah that's what it was
yeah very revelatory I can imagine. that's amazing and it's cool because you've had so much growth and have been able to work on Pirates and of course mm-hmm. this incredible segue that I've just come up with. You just finished playing a pirate.
Ooh, good. That was good.
In SpongeBob the Musical at Arizona Broadway Theater, you played Patchy the Pirate.
Yes, I did.
How much fun was that? And how was the run?
It was so much fun. A little bit about me. I had not worked professionally before. that. I didn't do summer stock. I went to Germany one summer. I was like, the pandemic happened. Spooky, scary. It's time to go.
I'm just always thinking of you working on shows. So realizing that that actually was your first professional production, I'm like, oh,
I'm happy
yeah,
to say
it was
right now. It was. It was wonderful. It was a quick casting process.
Yeah.
So I just kind of jumped into it. And I went to Arizona for 2 months in the summer, which was nice.
Yeah.
It was hot, but like I embraced it. You know, it was good.
Exactly.
And we were doing SpongeBob, of all things, which is so, it's such a fun show to perform,
yeah,
such a fun show to see. Also just hilarious that it exists,
yeah,
even.
Yeah.
And I was patchy. So I was patchy at the beginning and like the top of act two, the end mm-hmm. of the show, and I was in the ensemble for the rest of it. So I did like all the dancing, all the singing, all the characters.
That's a lot of dancing.
It is. It is. I wasn't one of, there were, I think, five, like
the tapper
like featured dance. Well, yeah, I was not a yeah. tapper that. And then also the sardines, there's like a few of them that do the heavy lifting
yeah.
of that. But we really did dance. We
yeah.
were all expected to, and we did, and that was good.
That's awesome.
But yeah, no, and some great friends, Stephen Fala,
yes.
who was on the podcast. I literally
exactly.
met him there.
And then you introduced him to me. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, he had a podcast. You had a podcast. I
yeah.
thought, you know, a little matchmaker there.
Exactly.
But, and now he is, I'm talking about Stephen Fala. He's working for Rockefeller too. He's on Sesame.
On Sesame Street. It's funny. I see him almost like every week or so. And Stephen says, hey. So
I bet he does. Hi,
he's in
Steven.
Chat right now. So there we go. Oh my God. And I'm sure it must have been so fun to play such an iconic character in SpongeBob. Like the kids know who Patchy is. The adults who watched as kids
yeah.
knew who Patchy was. Like you were yeah. him, you know.
I know we're gonna talk about Winnie the Pooh in a second. So I just,
we will.
I'm gonna like connect the dots a little bit right
yeah.
away. Patchy and Christopher Robin, who I play in Winnie the Pooh, like have similar roles in theory of like the show. Like Patchy is the character that the audience like relates to. Like
yeah.
they're like, even just watching the show, like Patchy as he exists on the TV show is the biggest fan of SpongeBob.
Yes.
Like he loves SpongeBob, and the audience usually also loves SpongeBob. So the audience
yeah.
is like, oh, I relate to this guy. He's got goofy, like uncle vibes, like
yes.
weird uncle vibes, but I relate to him and he's so excited. Like I'm excited. We love SpongeBob. And then Christopher Robin in Winnie the Pooh is another like outsider. Like Patchy the Pirate is not an undersea creature. Christopher Robin is not, you know, a stuffed
one
animal
of the animals.
Or
yeah.
a woodland creature.
Yeah.
And the kids who are coming to see Winnie the Pooh love Winnie the Pooh just
yeah.
as much as
Christopher Robin
does. And like they have their own stuffed animals at home, which like the relationship between Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh and the relationship between them and their stuffed animals is like what they see emotionally. So there's kind of this cool thing where like an audience like conduit experience is like what I've
yeah.
been doing. And it just is left. Like I'm not about to say that's my career path. Let's only do that. But it's just fun. And,
yeah.
and it's nice. It's one of the most rewarding parts of it because those characters exist for the audience connection.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
I love
that. It's been very special to do that.
I can imagine. And throwing back to SpongeBob for just a quick moment,
mm-hmm.
I do have to give a shout out that, yes, Stephen Fala was in it and a former guest. We also had other former guest, Stephen Callis,
yeah.
Who was also on Overtures, and then a fellow Wagner grad of ours, Michael Mutkowski, who is
yeah.
in it. He has not been on Overtures yet, though, so I just got to get him on, and then it'll be like a full house at that point.
Full
so.
House.
Exactly. Get all of them. But that must have been fun to work on SpongeBob with two other fellow Wagner grads on your first professional production.
Yeah. Stephen Callis, not Stephen
yes.
Fala.
Stephen yes.
Callis was a senior when I was a freshman. So we didn't have a lot
right.
of overlap, but
true.
It was great to work with him and get to know him. And then Michael was literally my college roommate.
Yeah, exactly.
For two out of four of the years.
Yeah.
And I lived with him a little bit this summer. We like shared an apartment. We were, yeah. So like, it's great. It's really
I
great
love that.
To work. And to, we were in Arizona. So we were also all living together and working on the show. And that was like, really, I feel very lucky for that to have been like my first thing. Yeah. Anything that would have been my first thing would be great, but it was great. It really was.
Yeah, yeah. And we have a clip from, I believe this is also from Arizona Broadway Theater, but it looks like it's a gala type situation.
Oh, yes.
So yeah. I'm going to pull that up and we'll get to watch that for a hot second.
Okay.
Gabe was a world-class jerk. Dad was never there. The only family that really mattered. Well, she vanished into the air. And now I finally find a haven, someplace safe where I can stay.
You sound so good on that song, by the way. So I sure hope that that's in your book. So
yeah, I love that song. I love it's so much Lightning fun. Thief. Once again, a thing I read the books as a kid.
Yes.
They make a musical. It's not for kids, but it's for, like, that kind of thing. Art, like, related to children and like building upon that is something I'm like intensely interested in at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. Because Lightning Thief, SpongeBob, and now with Winnie the Pooh, like the huge relationship between these is that they play to young audiences, like as well as adult audiences.
Yeah.
And I know so many of us got our start doing junior shows, and we were just talking about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And theater for young audiences, I know you can vouch for this, is so incredibly important. But I want to hear from you, what are some aspects that you've like witnessed as like a kid working on these productions, and how that like strengthened your understanding of like theater for young audiences?
Sure. So when I did junior shows, we were mostly all kids. So it didn't feel like we were doing shows for kids.
Yeah.
We just were kids. But that was like really like formative to practice and to learn all those things. And I'd worked in summer camps, right? I hadn't done theater in summer camps, but I'd worked in them. So I'd worked with kids before. But this is my first time really doing like TYA, essentially. And I'm like 5'5" and a tenor and like still look rather young. Like TYA is a very nice place to be.
Yes.
It's a very like a very like appropriate place for me to be spending time. And I just love it. Like the connection with the audiences, and not that I need everything to be wholesome, but the wholesome vibe, the like happy, it's just feel good is what it ends up being.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So when we did, so SpongeBob was like written for Broadway, so not specifically TYA.
Right.
Kind of a bigger feel. But we had plenty of kids in our audiences, and they were all so excited to be there. And we saw people like wearing, like dressing up a little bit as like SpongeBob and Patrick, and coming in with that kind of energy. And that was really nice. And then now working on Disney's Winnie the Pooh, we're seeing like kids everywhere.
Absolutely.
All kids. we have shows open to the public, public performances, and those are like mixed audiences. We have a lot of morning shows. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Because our show's an hour, and it's mainly for families, although kids like 1 to 100 love it.
Yes.
But we have a lot of morning shows, like not a 2 and 7, you know, we have a lot of morning, and that's been fun. And we've had school shows, a bunch of those, where like the tickets are not on sale to the public, it's just schools coming on buses. And those have been, there was one, we were in a theater in Austin, and it was kind of a smaller venue, but very, very nice, like for our show.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one morning where we had two separate school shows. So they just packed that theater with kids, and they were just some of the most like appreciative, happy, excited, reacting audiences. Not for that show, but like for me in general, like to have that. And I was, we'd done school shows before that, but that was the first time at that school show. I think we had someone come out and like introduce the show, like some kind of education supervisor for that theater.
Yeah.
And that was when it clicked that like, oh, I'm the theater guy that like the kids are watching and being like, I could maybe do that.
Yeah.
Like the guy coming into school, who's the actor, doing this. That was weird. That was really cool.
You're like full. That you're like, that's a huge full circle moment right there.
For sure.
Well, and especially you were talking about like having all of these kids in an audience. What I love about like performing for kids also is that like they will honestly react.
Yeah.
Like if they think if they think it is funny, they will laugh. If they're like, ooh, like, you know, you can, you are very aware of how it's emotionally impacting them. And I think that that's so cool about getting to like perform for kids and things like that. And I'm sure like you've met kids afterwards, be it like SpongeBob or Winnie the Pooh,
right,
you could actually understand like how special it was for them to like get to see this show.
Yeah, we got a lot of really good reactions. We get like standard applause, laughs. We get a lot of, specifically at Winnie the Pooh, I feel like we get some call outs. We get some, like when characters appear sometimes,
yeah, you know,
kids want to say hi.
Yeah.
And they do. And then we also, there's like a frog puppet that has a brief exciting moment in our show. And when the frog exited, we got a bye-bye froggy. And that's just like in the wings, you're like, oh my goodness.
You're like, this is so stinking cute.
Like I've seen that frog 30 times, but that kid saw him for the first time and said, bye-bye froggy.
Yeah.
Like
completely attributed a whole character to that frog.
Yeah, I was like, we don't call him Froggy necessarily. Like, no. But yeah, there's a whole like experience happening for the kids individually. And it is different person to person because it's not like we're getting the same call outs everywhere, but it's right. Very special and it's nice to connect. And we have, you know, plushes we have like on sale and
yeah.
We have merch and we have just so much appreciation for like the brand and the story of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
So when we were in Austin as well, yeah. At the hotel, I like had to go down and get a new room key, something. And the desk attendant knew we were with Winnie the Pooh and talked to me for a little while. And he was also like, oh, and it's great that kids still know about Winnie the Pooh. Like it's great that, and he was older than I was, but I was like, yeah, I mean, these books were written, almost if not 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And the Disney films started coming out in the 60s and 70s. And then, VHSs and made for video and all of those movies that are now all streaming. And someone like has entrusted us this story and these characters everyone loves. And that's what we're doing.
And all of these kids get so excited. And I think it speaks to that appreciation we were talking about before of junior productions and why they're so important for kids. And to fully turn our attention towards Winnie the Pooh now. First, so you're currently on a fall break of sorts. Before then, how long had you been, like when did tours start? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, we had a rehearsal period in July.
Okay.
I came in for a week and a half of it. So it was quick for me. Some other people had a little bit longer. That's actually when I saw you at Theater Row.
Yes.
I should put that in the podcast. Yes. I saw you. So
like on one of your first days of rehearsal, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was lovely. And it was great to rehearse, you know, on the set in the Off-Broadway house to go to work there. That was cool. We met a lot of that current cast and talked to them about things. And they were very like helpful and knowledgeable and nice.
Yeah.
And then we officially went out. We flew out to Irving, Texas on September 5th. And we had 2 weeks of tech at that venue.
Oh, cool.
And then we opened on the 16th in Irving, did a weekend of shows, and then we started actually touring. And we were in Texas until early October. We hit a bunch of places in Texas, which was great. And then we've now been, Texas I had been to before, but then states we were too recently, I had never been. Like I'd never been to Kansas or Nebraska.
Yeah.
Or I don't think I'd ever been to Iowa. Now I have.
Probably. You're like, now I have.
Now I have. That's tour. So yeah, we've been doing this since September 5th, touring since the 16th. We have a week off now. We're going to do 2 weeks when we get back. We've got more dates in the future, including like we'll go to Proctor's in March, I have to say, because that's where my family will probably see it.
Yay, that's so exciting. And this is obviously your first tour. So how has that experience been thus far, that process?
It's great. It's pretty much what I expected. I had always wanted to tour. I like the travel without the aspect of me like needing to plan the travel, you know?
You're like, I just go where they tell me.
I go where they tell me, and there's distinct vibes in each place.
Yeah.
And different things to do. Either like a simple like restaurant or like something more fun. Like we've been to some like parks, like I think it's called like an arboretum. Like we've been to mm-hmm. some like fancy, especially as fall started happening, you know, we wanted to get outside and do some fall things. But it's really pretty great. We're in hotels, we're moving around, the show is the same. Mm-hmm. Our job is fun.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying touring so far.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I know it can be exhausting but incredibly rewarding. So it's always exciting to hear that, especially when you're on your first tour. Like, yeah, I think I got this.
I got home, like I said, yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is upstate New York. And now I'm in New York City, but I was not expecting how tired I would be. I was like fine and normal. It was also just like a big travel day.
Yeah.
But like peak energy, enjoying tour. And then the second like gear shifted a little bit, I went,
okay, I'm home now.
But I'm very excited to go back. We go out November 1st. So after Halloween, we'll go back to tour. I'm so excited to go back.
That's so exciting. Hooray. And then of course we were talking about how you play Christopher Robin, and right. I'm curious about, since this is a child's role in terms of like Christopher Robin is a kid, I'd love to walk through what that like audition process was like. How did, what was it like to realize you would be playing such an iconic character in Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah. So I was still in Arizona when I was submitting for this. There was a call, and I saw it, and I realized that it made sense that, once again, I'm 5'5", and I look young, and they were hiring, in New York and Chicago. It had been,
played by
a few children rotated. They were going to go with an adult who could pass for a child or could act as a child, mm-hmm. for tour, which makes sense logistically.
With the long hours, like absolutely.
Yeah. Hours and moving around and different states. So I was like, ooh, this is like a once in a lifetime thing. Like a year ago, I might not have seen this call. A year mm-hmm. from now, I might, you know,
be doing something else.
A year older.
Yeah.
Like so I was very excited, and they were nice, and they gave me some callbacky stuff, and I filmed it while I was in Arizona. And then I did a Zoom callback. And then I flew to New York from Arizona and started rehearsals.
That's crazy. So just straight there.
Yeah. And then the break. We did have time off.
Of course.
But yeah, so I knew what I was getting into, and I was excited to do that, to play young. I like pitch my voice a little bit higher in the mm-hmm. show, bring that childlike energy. But once again, it's easy with all the kids around.
Oh, 100%.
All of the energy around the show to show up in that way and to have some fun.
That's always fun too, about like having to record an audition video while you're currently on another contract, where you're sort of like, hey buddy, can you like help me with this? Can you read sides with me? Like, you're like, I know we're doing this show currently, but if you can help me out real quick. But
that's
again,
actors love that.
Exactly. Well, and essentially going from SpongeBob to Winnie the Pooh as well. So like it's all in kind of the same genre of fun and like playing to youth. So it all makes sense, and it all works out.
Yeah.
And I'm curious you were saying, how long does the tour run? Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. So we close May 7th.
Gotcha.
So it's a while. But we have some breaks. So
nice.
We have, like I said, 2 weeks coming up, and then you'll also be able to see me in January through May with the currently scheduled date.
Beautiful. I obviously, the town in which you're staying that your parents are more likely to go see, I'm sure you're excited for that location, but there any other like locations on tour that you're super excited about?
Locations. Let's see. I was excited like past tense to go to Kansas, because we lost. and that was fun. Anything, I'm excited. Like I said, I'm excited to see my family. We have a Brooklyn date.
Oh, fun.
I'm not sure if it's a school show. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that, but we're in Brooklyn. there's some like Jersey, Philly, I have family there too. And I know that we're going down to Florida for like, I think 2 weeks in February.
And it won't be too terribly hot.
Yeah, but even if it is, like, let's go.
Exactly. Let's enjoy
adventure.
It.
I keep saying adventure is like a key concept in our show. And I do like to say, like, is adventuring across the United States, but it does feel like that. And I am like embracing that, that term and the idea. Like, I do feel like this tour is specifically an adventure.
I love that. I love that. And then how can people go get tickets to see you, Pooh, and friends?
Right. So we have our website should be WinnieThePoohShow.com. If it's not, those words will definitely bring you to where you need to go.
Yes.
Their Instagram and Facebook are also Winnie the Pooh Show. Tickets are, since it's a tour, there's all through the venues, mm-hmm. you know, so it's taking you to separate websites. But if you know when and where we are, and it's all clearly marked as accurate and up to date as possible on the website, you'll be able to get tickets and come see.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I will find that website and put it in the description of this video after we're done here, so people can find that easily without getting too lost on Google or otherwise. But
sure.
but it looks like we're coming to the end of this episode. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you on social media, internet, that kind of thing?
Yeah, the internet and social media. I'm on Instagram at my name, so it's Ross Coughlin. That's the best place to find me. I also have a YouTube, which some clips have gone up from this. I would say that those are the two places. I am working on a website. I would love to be able to tell you what that is, but I don't have it yet.
That's okay. When you update it, send it over to me.
I will. But yeah, Instagram is a good way to just see what I'm up to. You can also DM me there if there's something going on.
Yeah.
Some kind of contact issue, but, but yeah, that and YouTube.
Perfect. Amazing. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram and my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show on Instagram at Overtures Show. That's where I post all of the updates. That's where everything goes to first, but please go back and check like Twitter and things like that, because I will be posting there too. You can find this show here on YouTube. That's where we go live. Just search Overtures Show, subscribe, check out the new community tab. That's going to be super fun. And then also check out Spotify and Apple Music. That's where all of the backlogged episodes are getting edited and getting posted to. I'm finally getting to almost present day on uploading all these former episodes up there. So it's pretty up to date. So I'm very excited about that. And if you can leave a rating or a review, I hope to give some people some shout outs and thank yous and things like that here live on air. So yeah. So with that, Ross, do you have final thoughts? Any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Live and in the future. Embrace theater and embrace it like at an early age. Like bring people to theater, bring mm-hmm. people to movies, bring people to art, because everyone can do it, everyone should do it, and it's like essential. Storytelling is essential to who we are as people.
Yes, 100%. Yes. I couldn't phrase it any better than that. So thank you, Ross, so much for being on, and thank you for everyone who tuned in live, and we will see you all later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.